So, welcome to the Alton Brown Cast, a little audio project I put together because I miss adult conversation. Adult conversation free of the agendas so often inflicted by publicists, handlers, and press hounds onto late night chat shows. Adult conversation free of invasion by phones, tablets, laptops, or any of their ancillaria. And no, not all of the conversations you're going to hear here will be food-centric. There are other things to talk about. That said, following today's chat, I will attempt to answer a small collection of culinary queries from the interwebs. But first, Bryn Smith looks absolutely nothing whatsoever like a bartender. Or rather, what guys like me used to think bartenders look like. Vivacious and very blonde, Bryn came to LA from Washington State seeking stardom. And she found it. Not in front of the cameras, though I wouldn't be surprised if that happens too, but when she was accepted into a bartender training program. But I'm going to let her talk about that. I met her at the bar of Soto, Steve Samson's damn near perfect basement eatery Italiano on Pico in the city of Angels, where Bryn is in charge of the beverage program. And speaking of Angels, Bryn's kind of the angel of Amari, the bitter liqueurs that I crave above all other spirits. She's also a big fan of Britney Spears. I didn't see that coming. Okay, who are you?
Bryn Smith, and I'm beverage director at Soto Restaurant.
Beverage director.
Yeah.
So that's not just like bartender anymore. It used to be like 20 years ago, you would have said you're a bartender, right?
Yeah.
And then maybe 10 years ago, you would have said you're a mixologist.
Yeah. Well, I kind of say too that I'm a fancy bar wench as well. You know.
Well, isn't bar wench, does that actually change the expectations?
Well, I feel like I'm, you know, I don't know. I just.
By the way, we're drinking.
We're drinking.
That is the fabulously ice. Civilized sound of ice. Before we get too far into this, Bryn, tell us about the drink.
This is a Whistlepig Rye Negroni with Maletti's new aperitif, their 1870 with Carpano Antica. Big fan of Whistlepig.
Of course, here's the deal.
Yeah.
You called it a Negroni, but technically by using brown liquor, didn't you convert it into a Boulevardier?
Yeah, but to me, lately, the Negroni has kind of become a cocktail family. So you can say tequila Negroni, mezcal Negroni.
Really? So if
yeah,
it's got,
I feel
if it has,
that, so it's like
if it
a
has
family.
A bitter aperitif like Aperol or Campari,
in a way,
and it's
yeah.
balanced with like half a part of sweet vermouth,
yeah.
it's a Negroni.
Yep.
Wow.
That's kind of how we're like changing, you know.
I haven't had a tequila Negroni.
Oh, that's my favorite.
Really?
Reposado tequila Negroni.
I tend to prefer mezcals in cocktails, and I don't know
okay.
why. I tend to gravitate
you try
that way.
Mezcal.
Yeah.
Oaxaca Negroni.
Oaxaca Negroni. That gives it more multicultural
yes,
kind of stuff.
Yes.
So, in talking about the perception of what your job is and how really the role of the cocktail has changed in
absolutely.
In the last, oh, we'll say decade. Now, I've spoken, even on the show, I've spoken to some pretty serious barkeeps in New York, but never anybody here on the West Coast. So I'm interested in a couple of things. But let's start with how you see the perception of your role as a culinary player. You know, I mean, let's face it, when our parents
yeah.
were drinking,
yeah.
you and there are still bars where you
yeah.
just, you go to drink and
yes.
you drink well.
Yeah.
You drink out of the well is what
yeah,
I mean.
Yeah,
which, you know,
totally.
Rot gut.
Even when I was 21 as well.
Yeah, like, you're still drinking.
Like it was like you were told to drink vodka soda and like Makers and Diet as a girl, you know, and occasionally get your shooter. You know?
Makers and Diet.
Yeah. That's
so it's actually
so
not even
bad.
Just
yeah, I'm giving away my bad secrets.
I hate bourbon and Coke. I am
yeah.
not a bourbon. Now,
yeah.
a Cuba Libre,
yeah. Yeah.
I'll go for.
Yeah, hey.
A good rum and Coke with
totally.
A balance of lime
yeah,
changes
absolutely.
Everything. But
yeah.
Bourbon
yeah.
I think bourbon and Coke became popular in the South where I'm from
mm-hmm.
Because it simply tastes it makes the vomit so much better later on. It's just so much easier to puke than regular
absolutely.
Drinks. Sorry, I already went there and I apologize. So
no.
So tell me about how things have changed and how your job has become the job that it is, and kind of your role, not as a separate entity in the culinary world, but as a true partner to a chef and in a restaurant.
Yeah, I feel like it's changed a lot. I even feel like, I mean, the food scene, there's always been like the farm to table aspect and that kind of stuff. But I feel like recently, like over the last 10 years, it's been like a huge change, and everybody wants to know where their stuff's coming from, how everything is like not mass-produced.
They want the narrative. Do they really care, or do they just want the narrative? They just want the story.
I think they want the story for sure, because I'm always telling a story with my cocktails and things like that. But I feel like more with what people are drinking, like with wine and how much they care about that, it's now time with the cocktail. Like, it's time to like make something artisanal and make something special and make something different, not your normal, like everyday, like, you know, people still come in and order the same drink, and that's totally fine. But we have so many awesome liqueurs out there. Like, it's time to really experience and use them, utilize them.
Well, in order to do that, you have to educate.
Yeah. Absolutely.
You know, I mean, you can't take people that are used to drinking vodka and tonic and turn them on to something with Fernet Branc in it
You go slowly and you gain their trust at the bar.
Well, let's play a game. Yeah. I'm coming into the bar for the first time. Well, the restaurant. I'm coming in a soda, which for those of you that have not been, and I realize most of you haven't because most of you aren't in Southern California, but it is an amazingly fine restaurant run by a true gentleman. Goes by the name of Samson, and
Chef
he's
Steve.
Chef Steve. and it's a fantastic culinary experience. But the first thing that you see when you walk in is the bar. So I come in and I order scotch and soda.
Yeah.
And you look at me and you're like, you know what? I'm going to change your life.
Yeah.
What do you do?
I would probably try to get them to do something boozy and aromatic to start off, because with what people want is something balanced. When they're drinking a scotch and soda, it's almost like they can't drink the scotch alone, so they need to water it down in a way and have some sort of refreshing drink. But why not try something like a scotch perfect Manhattan? Put a little dry, put a little sweet in there, a little bitters with the scotch. That's something that can be not heavy, but also like complex, and you're not just drinking soda and watered down scotch, you know?
And how many times a night would you say that you do engage? Let's put it that way.
Every night.
Every night you engage with someone who is not part of this movement, so to speak.
Or they're scared. They're so scared.
Or they think it's frou-frou.
Yeah.
They think it's frou-frou.
Yeah.
They're like, I'm a serious drinker and
totally.
I just want liquor and something to water it down in a glass. And so you must get that.
Well, that's the thing that happens. Like, then I'm down to show them all the small batch artisanal liquors we have, you know, to show them like we have this scotch that not a lot of people have at their bars. We are the first to have this, and you need to try this.
Okay.
Scotch,
so my comeback is no, you know, I'm just a Johnny Walker guy. And then you say,
and I said, well, actually we don't sell that kind of stuff at Soda.
You don't have Johnny Walker?
No, we only
not
do
even Johnny
small,
Walker Blue or
no,
anything like that.
We
oh,
do all small batch artisanal spirits. And I don't know how I get away with it, but I feel like people can just trust me and know that I'm not a crazy person, or I'm not like a mean person, that I really do care about giving them the best thing. And that's the thing, like, we're charging the same amount, and once I get them to try it, 99.9% of the time people are like, oh wow, and then I have their trust, and then I'm able to take them so many different places with cocktails, and it's super fun, you know, because then they really are like, wow, like, I can't get that experience anywhere else. Or someone who truly cares about like pairing your dinner with food, with cocktails, it's cool. It's fun for me. It makes me happy. It's cool.
Do you find that people, by and large, are actually actively tasting their drinks more?
Yes.
Because I think that for a very, very long
time
in American culture, it was about bolting it down.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
absolutely.
It was the cod oil liver of alcohol, you know, just get it down.
Just get it done. Get it down.
Get it down.
Yeah.
And now people are actually learning how to taste.
Yeah. People are like, you know, knowing about a whiskey sour with an egg white. And, you know, 6 years ago when I first opened Soda, like, it wasn't a thing. Like, people were still so scared of it. They're still so weird. And now they're like, do you know how to make a whiskey sour? I'm like, heck yeah, I do. You know?
Tell me about a whiskey sour with an egg in it.
It brings the most velvety, beautiful texture. It's light, it's fluffy, it's citrusy.
Make it for me. Use words and make it for
me.
Walk
basically,
me through it.
I'm getting an egg. I'm cracking the egg.
Is it a cold egg or warm egg?
It's
room
a
temperature.
Cold egg.
It's a cold egg. Okay.
Put the cold in. Yes, because you want your cocktail eventually to be cold anyway.
Yes, ma'am. So just check it. These are details.
Yeah.
These are details.
So you're cracking the egg. You're separating the yolk. Then you're taking out some fresh lemon juice, cold, hopefully. 3/4 ounce. 3/4 ounce of a simple syrup. My simple syrup usually is a 1-to-1 ratio.
Weight or volume?
By weight. By weight.
Details.
By weight. Details. Details. And then bourbon. You can do it with rye as well. I mean, honestly, any sour. Sour is another family where you can interchange any spirit. But with whiskey, 2 ounces of whiskey. And then you put it all in the tin and you whip it dry without ice in the tin to really emulsify. And get
by whip,
that
you're just shaking it.
You're whipping like circular motion.
A circular motion.
Yeah, okay. Like a circular motion. And then you add ice, shake the heck out of it, strain it out with no ice, garnish with some beautiful Angostura drawings on top. Or
you're making these hand
I'm
motions.
I'm making these motions,
that are
yes.
like fairy rain or something.
Totally. Drops. I like to do hearts.
And
I'm
when
so
people,
girly.
And when people say, that is relatively girly. So when people say, okay, what does the egg white do, you say?
It just brings this the most beautiful texture to a cocktail. It really doesn't add any, doesn't really add any taste to the cocktail. It just makes it be fluffy.
It's protein. So
protein.
It makes
yeah.
it foamy.
There you
it
go.
Gives it a foam.
Gives it a foam. Absolutely. And you can draw art on the top. That's cool.
Oh, like you feel like in your latte, you
yeah,
can
totally.
Now you can uh-huh. Design the top
mm-hmm.
of your
and that's always fun.
Your whip. I mm-hmm. guess that's a yeah. that's technically a whip.
Yeah.
when did you personally? I mean, maybe we need some context. How did you start? I don't know your origin
in
story.
The industry.
Yeah,
yeah.
When did you first get behind the bar?
I was unemployed. And it was during the recession. I was looking for a job in the hospitality world, and there was this...
What were you doing before that?
I was serving and pursuing acting okay. as well. And there was this weird Craigslist ad from Julian Cox that basically said, new exciting bar opportunity if you're willing to take time and learn. And at this point, I was unemployed. So I'm like, you know what? Let's just respond to every single thing. I did. I went to Rivera, which was a restaurant downtown, no longer there. And I was in this huge room with all these bartenders that were like the top bartenders in LA. And I had never bartended before. So I'm kind of like, how am I here? Why am
have I
here?
Done the wrong thing?
Yeah. What? Why did they pick me? So I had a little interview with him and kind of like an orientation. And then I trained for 8 weeks at Rivera before they started opening all their restaurants. And I went to Playa, which was another restaurant, and then eventually DeSoto. And then I stayed at Soto. I was a bar back at first. So I was like my first year in was still bar backing at Soto. And then kind of the rest is history. It just kind of started playing around with making cocktails, thinking about what inspired me to make a cocktail and kind of went for it. Put one on the menu, put a couple on the menu. And then eventually one of the guys that was leaving, he was like, you got to do this. I was scared at first. But I did
scared
it.
Scared or intimidated or being more sincere?
Yeah, I would say I was a little intimidated to take on all that responsibility and all that, you know, maybe pressure in a way. But I have to say it was the best choice I ever did. Like I'm...
What... Do you remember the day where you thought, wait, I'm good at this?
Yeah.
Do you remember that? Was
yeah.
there an actual moment?
Well, there was a moment when I make people so happy with my butterbeer at work. I have this Harry Potter-inspired butterbeer, and I literally have people that come in just for that and tell me I can't take it off the menu or trying to order it with me outside of work.
Well, I remember the first time I came into Soto, somebody came in and ordered
yeah, butterbeer. Yeah, and it just like, they're like, thank you so much for making this. Like, it really meant something to them. And
how do you
I was
make
like,
butterbeer?
I make it with Tito's vodka, a little light brown sugar, light corn syrup. And butter, actual butter. And then I make a vanilla bean simple on the side, ratio it together so it's, you know, balanced. Add a little bit of water and then I carbonate it. So the whole batch is carbonated. And then I bottle it and I serve it with an Angostura bitters whipped cream. It's not like exactly like the original butter.
So it's not a beer.
No, it's a fictional thing from Harry Potter.
It's a carbonated
yes.
alcoholic.
So how they serve it at the parks is very butterscotch. Out non-alcoholic schnapps with cream soda.
Right.
Like this marshmallowy cream. So I had to try a version that was more for a bartender.
Got it.
Yeah.
and having the gumption to do that, was that a definitive moment in a way? I mean, at least for you as a...
Yeah, because I was working with other tools like CO2 and all that stuff. So that was kind of cool to do that. And I just, you know, the kid in me wanted that for people and wanted that for me to say that I made an alcoholic version of butterbeer.
Is that something that makes you different, that you're willing to still be a kid? Because let's face it, we don't talk much about kids and bartenders in the same.
No, not at all. Not at all.
Is there a sense of play
that
you feel that you've got that maybe is not something that is common?
My first ever cocktail at Soto was this, it was called Rosolio, and it was based on this beautiful like rose liqueur that's very popular in Sicily. And when I was younger, I used to like make rose perfume with my mom. Like from roses, like I would grab my roses and make perfume and put them in bottles.
Most people don't grow up making their own rose perfume.
Yeah, so like I always was wanting to mix and like do things.
Where was your mother from? What's your heritage?
Washington State.
What's your heritage?
My mom is German and we don't know part of her heritage, so I have to find that out one day.
Okay, so but mostly German.
Yes, and then
Germans make
as well.
Oh, it's Swedish.
Yeah.
So this you used to just pound up roses and soak them in oil.
And soak them in oil and water. Yeah, and then I would want to like bottle them. And for me as a little kid, like thinking that and coming back and being like, my first cocktail was like a rose infused, like kind of like a candy, like a rose candy with like an anise flavor inside. And it just, to me, it's just like, I really was always wanting to do stuff like that with flavors, making fun milkshakes when I was little, like all that kind of stuff. So
you were always into concoctions.
Yeah, big time. Yeah.
Do you remember any of the milkshakes?
I would just always make like, you know, Oreos in there, peanut butter cups or stuff like that, extra vanilla.
You were getting
serious when I was little. Cereal.
You were blending up cereal?
Yeah, why not? Trying it out.
Why the heck not?
And now it's all about the Amaro milkshake for me. Or bitter milkshake.
It's funny. I used to save off the milk from Captain Crunch and like put it back in a special jar bottle so that I could drink it later in the afternoon. I wanted
cereal
that to
milk.
Be a separate thing. Yeah, cereal milk was...
Yeah.
I was into cereal milk way, way before anybody else was
I know.
Milk.
A lot of people like, are doing that now.
1966, I was into cereal milk.
You were in first.
Yeah,
yes.
I kind of like that. So when you decided... Because I'm always interested in how people end up doing the thing that they seem to be made to do.
It feels right.
You were unemployed. You decide to answer basically a want ad for a training program.
Yes.
And did you think, hey, you know what? I really liked concocting beverages when I was a kid. Maybe I'll like this now.
No. I didn't think, put two and two together until years later when I started finally making menu cocktails. And I'm like, wow, this is weird. Like, I've always liked doing this. It kind of was like the universe brought me to this place. I swear to God, it was very weird.
How could you be so... I mean, I'm sorry. Some people would say that's self-unaware.
Yeah.
That you
because I was like, wanted to be an actor. You know what I mean?
Like, why did you want to be an actor?
You know, to move to Hollywood, kind of be the center of attention. Who doesn't want to do that sometimes? Maybe that's why bartending's fun for me, too. I get to put on a show.
So you decided to be an actress and that didn't work out.
Yeah, it didn't. I mean,
did you really try that hard?
I tried, but then I kind of fell in love with the hospitality world. I have to say, I really did. Like I had fun going on auditions and I loved making connections with people, but I never was right for anything. And I felt like that really like started to get to me, you know, cause it's like, I'm just fine as I am. So now I want to do something that I can be creative.
Because the acting thing will not tell you that you're okay.
No, no.
That's not what that world's about.
Not at all. Not at all.
Search the imagination.
Yeah. So I feel more complete as a person, I have to say. Being able to do this, create something, make people happy.
So some part of your psyche was steering you towards the thing that you were really supposed to do.
Absolutely.
And then all of a sudden you start messing around with things.
Mm-hmm.
You really seem to be extremely knowledgeable of the spirit world.
Yes.
And what is out there. Did you just start studying like crazy?
Well, I just kind of kept stumbling upon things. Like I'd be like, I really like this liqueur. I'm going to read all about it. I'm just going to read about it and where it's from and what's, you know, and then I kind of, you know, once I read about it, other things will start popping up from it. When I was in Italy, you know, like you'd see things and you'd be like, oh my gosh, well, I knew about that. Now I have another story that connects me from that to that. So it's just me being, you know, wanting to learn and wanting to explore.
When was your first trip to Italy?
I actually went when I was 21.
But you weren't in this yet.
I wasn't in this yet. But I did drink a lot. I wanted to drink a lot of absinthe.
That's not really where you go for absinthe. But
no.
Okay.
Isn't that hilarious that I thought
she's
absinthe.
France, you go to
and so we,
and grappa
a,
and
yeah,
Strega.
But a lot of times we got grappa and we got Sambuca. They were Sambuca. Like, you stupid Americans. You don't even know what you're talking about.
Sambuca's.
Absinthe, what the heck?
Did you ever find your absinthe?
I mean, we did. But I just thought it was so funny that I was like, me and my friends were like, we're in Europe. Let's get absinthe. That's like all we knew.
Just Europe.
Yeah. So then the last time I went, I definitely got to, you know, geek out a little bit with the stuff I've learned and seen vintage bottles. And that was actually an experience, too. It was funny because going there, you start talking to the bartenders or talking to the people that work there.
Still Italy or?
In Italy. Or, okay. In Italy. And I would tell them that I like to work with Italian digestivos and make cocktails with this kind of stuff. And they looked at me like so bizarre.
You know this stuff?
This is the old man stuff. Why are you doing this? Like, what? You mix Amaro with cocktails? I'm like, yeah, it's a big thing in the States. And a lot of people are shocked by it in Italy. I mean, there's some mixology in Italy, but...
You're also,
nearly
you're
enough.
Also a blonde American woman.
That's true. That's true.
Which in Italy is
yeah.
still a different creature
true.
From human.
It's
if that's,
so true.
Is held from when
you're
I was
right.
last there. Yeah. So it's kind of like.
But then they thought I was crazy because I was mixing Amaro.
So there's none of that there?
There's not a lot. No. Every bar I went to, I was like dying to like find someone who was like a craft bartender. I've heard that in Rome and Milan, there's some, and I haven't been in a while. Since I was 21 to Milan and Rome, so I need to go next time.
Where have you been in your travels where you're like, these people get it?
Of cocktail-wise?
Yeah.
I still haven't been to New York, which is crazy.
What?
I've never been to New York. I've been to Italy twice. I've been to Nice. Yeah. I know. So
yeah,
I know I'm going to be bowing so down to greatness.
You're from
greatness.
Washington State, right?
Washington State.
Okay, well, you might want to make the trip.
Yeah, I know. I know.
Because if you're going to drink in the United States, you need to spend a little bit of time in
New
York and a little bit of time in New Orleans.
Yes, absolutely New Orleans. That's something on my bucket list, too.
Yeah. But right now, I have to say that anywhere in the world, that if you were to ask me, you know, where do you want to go for a cocktail, I'd go to Tokyo.
Oh, really?
Those people take their cocktails more seriously
than anything. They actually do.
They
do a lot of crazy fire.
Well, they just... The concentrating on absolute precision of technique.
The ice.
And, oh, yeah. Well, if the ice is in 7 centimeters by 6 centimeters, then the melt ratio is not going to be...
Yeah, no, they do. They're a little
So
little
I don't know
much.
I would want to try to work
I take
there,
a more rustic approach, but yes.
Some people would say rustic equals sloppy.
Really?
Do you...
No.
No?
No,
well, then
because
what's the difference? What's the difference between rustic and sloppy?
Sloppy would be like... You know, there's stuff falling over. There's not a precision. I like to foam my whipped cream on top and have a beautiful dollop, but it doesn't need to be precisely the same every single time.
All right.
So neat. I'm a neat.
You're neat bar wench.
Neat bar wench. Okay. Definitely.
But maybe not Japanese. Maybe not
No,
Japanese.
Not that neat. That's a
not
little much.
Japanese,
yeah.
Anytime.
You know, you want to have a difference. You don't want everyone to be the same. Just like a cocktail.
you still have a cocktail and mine's gone.
I know.
So you need to drink up so you can mix another one. If you know, you go to this, you answer this one ad.
Yeah.
You start working, you train, you work as a barback, you take over as eventually as a bartender essentially. And then you move to kind of the top spot in the organization, which is the beverage director.
The beverage director.
You've obviously put a lot of effort to learn in a relatively short time. I mean, how many years are we talking here?
Six and a half.
This is not a lot to become proficient at an art form.
Absolutely.
I would argue.
I wouldn't say that I was proficient.
No?
I would say I'm up there, and I'm really friendly, and I give you a fun time at the bar. But I wouldn't say I'm the most expert on all things alcohol. No. But I do know a lot, so to the average Joe.
But if I came in and I said, make me a martini, you would make a proper martini.
Yeah, and I would, tell you why and things like that. You know what I mean? Yeah.
By the way, if I asked you to make me a martini, I often judge bar people on drinks like martinis because there's not a lot
The martini is so sad.
There. Why is it?
Because most people think a martini is just vodka chilled or gin chilled.
although there are people in my life that have convinced me that occasionally a dirty vodka martini is good for the soul.
Totally. I made a good version.
I'm a gin man. I'm a gin man.
Yes.
And I believe in the interplay of gin and vermouth.
Yes.
So I come into your bar and I'm like, okay, hi, Bryn. I don't want your gosh darn butterbeer. Tonight.
Right.
You're not going to sell me anything with a Amaro in it tonight.
Okay.
I want a martini.
Yeah, I love it.
What are you going to do to make me remember that martini?
I would say...
Besides tell me a story.
Yeah, I would tell you a little bit of a story. I would just say I like to make mine the traditional way of making a martini with 2 drops of orange bitters, 2 ounces of gin, and 1 ounce of vermouth. Is that okay with you?
And I would say, hey, I just want the martini.
And I say, try it. I mix up things.
What if I challenged you about bitters?
Then I would say with bringing in the vermouth and the gin, the bitters really like finally makes the third ingredient come together and it's perfect. I always often say, if you don't like your drink, I will gladly make you a new one.
Okay. So make me a martini with words.
Martini. I would actually take right now, I'm really digging Martin Miller's. Westbourne Strength Gin. I would take 2 ounces of
that. Now, why? Why are you into it? Tell me about
Martin
this brand.
Miller's
We're not advertising here, but go ahead. Tell me about Martin Miller's.
Is so good. They actually use the water to distill their gin with Icelandic water.
Are they in Iceland?
They ship
water.
Yes. Yes.
That's not terribly sustainable.
No, it's not, but it's beautiful. The gin, it's so pretty.
It's pretty.
Yeah.
What's
gin.
Pretty?
The pretty, the coriander, gin. The beautiful notes of like citrus and floral notes. And it just isn't too juniper
style,
forward.
Which style? I mean, does this actually fall in a London dry?
Yeah, people would say it's technically a London dry.
But
I would say it can be a little bit more palatable to something like an American gin that's a little more botanical.
So you're going
to
sell me,
What's
it called again?
Martin Miller's.
They're Westbourne Strength. Sell me this Martin Miller. The what?
Westbourne Strength. So it's a
little peppier.
A little peppier.
Closer to like Navy stuff.
Navy, exactly.
Okay. So you're going to sell me on this artisanal American gin.
Yeah.
Right? And then hit me up with the vermouth.
The vermouth, I usually...
Because we're talking dry now.
French vermouth. I'm using a French vermouth. It's okay. I work at an Italian restaurant.
That's okay.
Dolan dry vermouth.
Okay.
Very well.
Yeah,
does very, very
and
well.
And you're using orange bitters.
Orange bitters.
Who's,
yeah. Regan's.
Bitters?
Regan's.
Okay.
Yep.
All right. Make it.
Yeah. Basically, I take a cold, chilled glass out and I add all my ingredients, the 2 dashes of orange bitters, the 2 ounces of Martin Miller's gin, the 1 ounce of Dolan dry, and then I add my ice. And I stir very slowly and carefully. I might crack a cube or two into the...
So you stir, you don't shake?
No.
Why would you not shake?
Stir.
Why
you just get such a better texture. It's
Why?
A more velvety silk.
Why?
Because the aeration, shaking in a tin...
Makes it too...
You get bubbles. It like kind of bruises the liqueur. Little bit
bruises.
Yeah, that's what I've been taught before.
And do you believe
that? I believe that. Absolutely. No, if you were to see the cloudiness of a shaken martini rather than a stirred, clear, crystal clear.
Well, you're basically making an emulsion in a way.
Yeah, exactly.
And some people would argue. Some people have argued that in post-war Europe after World War II, that Russian vodkas were so poorly made that you actually shook the martinis to emulsify the oil that was still in them because they were potato-based vodkas.
There you go.
Whether it's true or not,
I don't know.
I think it was Ian Fleming that explained that in an early James Bond novel about the whole shaken, not stirred. Mm-hmm. All right. So you're taking this French vermouth, you're taking some of the Regan's orange bitters and the American gin ice. You're stirring.
Stirring. You know, tasting as I go because I want it to be the most perfect.
Okay. Why? Why are you tasting
because,
as you go? Because you're looking for a certain melt rate?
And like you can tell when the spirit's still hot, you know, you're tasting it and it's not like blended with the water quite yet. And you know, there's that sweet spot. Once you taste it, you do a couple more stirs. You pour out with a julep strainer into a cold, chilled martini glass. I prefer a lemon twist. That's just me, but olive is great as well. Even a lovely onion cocktail.
Oh, you and my friend Simon Jemdar and your lemon twist. I get it. I love those citrus notes. But oh my gosh, I love olives so much.
It's okay.
So what I may do is I may just save my olives for my dirty vodka martinis, and I'll.
Well, you'll have to try my version sometime of my
dirty martini. Or tell me, make the dirty martini.
For so long, actually, at Soto, I didn't do dirty martinis.
Why?
Because
somebody said I want a dirty martini. You wouldn't. you make it?
I wouldn't be able to make it because when I first started, Julian, who started the bar with us, we did all pre-prohibition style cocktails. And to be honest,
all right, explain what that means.
Explain what that means. Please. Pre-prohibition is basically a lot of the popular cocktails in history were made around, you know, the late 1800s to right before Prohibition.
If you've read a book by David Rule, which you already know this.
Yeah. So basically we focus on those classic recipes. Any other recipe that's come out past then is like basically taken from those classic recipes. So we kind of wanted to focus on the lost art of bartending because for so long that was the case, you know?
Okay. What drink would you say typifies that if you were trying to explain this period to people?
Like a Manhattan, okay. Bee's Knees. We can go from the late 1800s to the 1920s.
You had just me in like, Manhattan.
Yeah, right? Yeah, Manhattan. The Manhattan, yeah.
Pretty much done.
Yeah, done.
My second favorite drink.
Yes.
All right, so let's get back to this refusal to make a dirty martini.
Yeah, so basically I just said, hey, we actually don't have, you know, we do that here at
Soto.
Oh, gosh,
did anybody actually call you out and say, oh, so you don't have vodka,
I mean, there's been
you don't have olives, you don't have olive brine, and you don't have a little vermouth. You don't have these
things.
We didn't
want to have vodka at Soto, but then they made us have vodka.
You actually tried to run a bar without vodka.
They tried at first, and then we were like, okay,
why? What was the purpose of
that? Well, this is the thing. I always tell people, because people are so scared to have anything other than vodka still. And I just tell people, you can have vodka. You can have aged vodka. You can have flavored vodka. It's called gin.
It's called
bourbon.
I usually say vodka is just gin. Somebody hasn't finished it.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. So to me, I just try to explain to them that using something other than vodka can bring you such more beautiful cocktail and so much more flavorful. Do you mind trying it? And then people try it and then they never go back. So for so long, it wasn't an issue.
So I walk into your bar and it's my birthday and I'm celebrating. All I want is a dirty martini.
Yeah.
And you didn't have vodka.
I would make,
So what would you make me?
I would probably make you a traditional martini or a Vesper. I made a Vesper.
The Vesper's not going to really get me any closer to it.
I know, the savory aspect. Or I would go into something like a Gordon's Cup, where you'd get a little cucumber gin, a little bit of lime, salt.
Now, Vesper's a misunderstood. I want to talk about the Vesper for a second.
Yeah, for sure.
It's a favorite of mine, but misunderstood, because, of course, when the Vesper originated, it was made with a product that is no longer available.
Yeah.
You know, Lilith no longer... Mm-hmm. So how do you deal with that? How do you make a proper Vesper now?
I use the Italian Cokie Americano.
So you use Cokie Americano.
Yeah,
I'm a huge fan of Cokie Americano.
Yeah, me too. It's, I love Cokie products.
Picture of a bottle in my book that's coming out.
Oh, awesome.
So you just know Lilla at all?
No, because we're Italian too. So I try to have everything be Italian. Okay. Besides my dry vermouth.
Okay.
But yeah, when people would come in.
So if I want that salty experience of a dirty martini,
I would have
which
to stir
really
you another way. So I finally caved in, and I made a cocktail, and I named it I'll live with this beautiful. I made the best version, I think, of a dirty martini.
And
I made my own brine. That kind
you
of
made
thing.
Your own brine.
Yes. So I took some little bit of some olive juice, and then I. Basically, Jardinera.
Jardinera.
Yes.
Sure.
A chef has this beautiful Jardinera recipe, and I added that with some olive juice, mixed it ratio together, add a little more couple elements to it.
You just did the fairy dust.
Yeah.
Because, you know, that means your secret stuff.
Fennel.
The stuff that
you know,
like.
Yeah,
you
added some fennel. I'll say fennel. That's it.
Okay.
You know, some other things. And then soaked actually more olives and pearl onions in the brine. And that flavor really comes through. And you can make it with gin, but I sell it with vodka as well. And a little celery bitters, a little bit of dry vermouth. I want this cocktail to be balanced. I don't want it to just be like a normal dirty martini that's just olive brine.
Well, it's olive brine and Tito's. And,
that's it.
You know, you shake it up and
that's
you
it.
A glass and you drink it.
You know,
it.
I wanted it to be balanced and have now, layers of flavor.
You are not the first of your kind.
Totally.
For me to hear... dwell upon the word balance.
Yes.
Explain it.
Balance.
If you don't mind.
I don't mind at all. Balance is the most important part in a cocktail. There's nothing worse than having something too sweet, too bitter.
So,
I really like bitter. So
what are you balancing? Tell me the components that you feel you're balancing.
Like anything, like a, let's say something simple like a gimlet.
Like, I love gimlets.
Yeah, a gimlet can be great.
Do you believe in Rose's lime for that?
No.
Or you're making your own?
I am juicing lime juice every day.
But that's not the same thing, now, is it?
Oh,
I mean, Rose's lime juice is a sweetened version. It's like a half syrup of lime juice.
So then I would make an evaporated cane simple syrup.
Okay.
Yeah,
as opposed to
regular white sugar, but I make it a little bit of a fancier.
So you make, how do you make your cane syrup?
1-to-1 ratio.
Okay.
Cold water. Good. Blend it up. There right. It is. Very easy. Okay. Very, very easy.
So
simple.
You're making a syrup.
Simple syrup.
And then you're mixing the lime with
mm-hmm.
it.
Lime.
To order, or you're doing that ahead of time so that you've got that made? Because how many gimlets can you make in a night?
It depends. It all depends.
Well,
but
if I was there might be several.
Yeah,
I love gimlets, but I've got to quit ordering them because all gimlets were bad.
All gimlets were bad.
It became that way.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, now it's like the fresh lime juice. Like I'm juicing every day. I don't have a mixture. I just have my lime, my simple, my lemon, and all my components at my bar, all separated because I'm the one that's mixing up a drink.
Perfect gin for a gimlet.
Perfect gin. Ooh, I love Beefeater. I have to say Beefeater is so key.
Beefeater 24.
Beefeater 24 is so good.
Yeah.
So good. I also love St. George. Their gins, their Botanivore gin is really lovely. A blackberry gimlet right now.
A blackberry gimlet?
Yeah, throw in a blackberry.
It sounds like it's heading towards a shrub, though, or something. I mean, that sounds...
Not if you muddle it. Yeah, you're not leaving it around to...
I don't know if I want berries in my gimlet.
Then you don't have to.
Well, I keep trying to tell you that my glass is empty.
I know.
Can you said you were going to make me another drink.
I have another drink.
Well, can you bring it over here and make it while we roll? Can you tell me what you're doing?
Yeah,
And I'll just sit here. We're in my trailer, my palatial Star Wagon trailer outside of studio. I don't even know what studio I'm in anymore. I hear at LA Center Studios. I don't know which stage it is. I think I'm in stage 4. Is it 4? I'm in stage 4. And I'm here with Brent Smith, the beverage director from Soto. And she was nice enough to make us a lovely version of a Negroni when we got here. But it's been a long day, and I could use something else.
Some more stuff.
So tell me what you got and what you're...
So I actually batched it out for you.
You batched it out?
Yes. Today I batched it out. So basically this is one of my another one of my menu cocktails that I've had before. I know you're a whiskey fan, so
I am.
This is called American Imbormiel. It's with one of my most Coke Americano, which you love, big fan of.
You just stretched your arms out
yes.
to me as though what's
happening?
Coke.
You just said you love Coke, so
love
I'm
Coke.
So excited for you. Angostura Bitters Bourbon and then a Braulio, which is probably my all time favorite Amaro.
I don't know.
It's an Alpine Amaro, so it has more of a peppermint kind of menthol-y vibe by the Alps.
Okay, so it's bourbon.
Bourbon.
A minty Amaro from near the Alps.
Yes.
Cokie. And
Angostura Bitters.
And Angostura. So I guess I need to go get me a glass now, right? Or dump this.
This is for you.
Oh, you're not drinking this one?
I'm going to finish that and then
pick
that one up. I know I'm slow. I'm talking too much.
No. This is excellent.
Yeah.
I have to say, as a drinker, Amaro's life-changing.
Life-changing.
Absolutely life-changing.
My favorite.
And relatively, you know, when I was fortunate enough, we're not going to make this about me, but I spent a big chunk of my 21st year in Italy. Thank you.
Yes.
What do you call it?
American in Bormio.
American in Bormio.
That's the town where Braulio's
from. Kind of a little pun there.
Yes,
right,
it is.
I'm going in. You finish this. It's cloudy.
A little bit.
It's murky brown.
A little bit.
And,
the Braulio.
And there's a nice twist on the top. Little lemon.
Lemon twist. It sounds like it'd be heavy, but it's so not heavy at all.
This.
It's light. It's good.
Is potentially my favorite new cocktail.
Isn't it awesome? It's like light. It's not scary bitter.
It's not heavy like a bourbon drink.
No, it's almost like it's a bourbon tea, but there's no tea in it.
But there are tea notes.
There are tea notes.
And it looks like a tea. It's got a tisane.
Yeah.
I could pass this on.
I kind of wanted to have a boozy tea.
I could like go to a church social with this and say, I'm just drinking tea.
I'm just drinking tea.
Because, you know, I'm from the South and we drink tea, so I'm just going to drink my tea.
Yeah, and that's cheers. Bitter tea.
Cheers.
I wish I could do a
bitter tea.
A better accent.
Well, you ain't from around there.
I'm not.
You ain't never even been down South, have you?
I've been to Georgia.
Have you?
My brother went to Georgia Tech.
Really?
Yeah, he aerospace engineer.
Smart guy.
Smart guy.
We drink a lot of brown liquor.
Yes, you do.
Down there.
Yes. Wouldn't you?
Well, I mean,
whiskey all around. Close.
Yeah, but we don't make it.
No, you know? But it's close. It's, Tennessee's it's right close. There.
Tennessee's right there. And Kentucky's
a little bit farther.
A little farther, further up the road a piece. But yes, we are great drinkers of brown liquor. But then, when you know, I discovered in Italy one of the great loves of my life, which is bitterness. Mm-hmm. You know, Americans run
life.
From it.
And, it's crazy.
And, you know, I'm there and living in this little town doing theater for a few months when I was 21. And all these bitter flavors, you know, bitter on pizza, bitter coffee, bitter. And then there would be these drinks that were, I mean, we were just drinking Amaro. We were just drinking Grappa.
Yeah.
We were, you know, there was no cocktail program in Cortona, Italy in 1984.
No.
We were just drinking.
Mm-hmm.
But I found myself so drawn. I remember brilliantly. And it's funny, Sarah, my director of digital ops that's here, we've talked about this. I remember my first Campari.
Me too.
And it was a revelation. You know,
totally.
And I went from that to Cynard, Aperol, mm-hmm. Anything that was bitter that I could get into a glass that I would drink. It was like I had been robbed of it.
True. It's so true. Because as Americans, we're so scared of it. They're so scared of it.
Terrified of bitterness.
That's my job in the world.
Is to get people
to like bitter.
Well, look how things have come around. Look how things
it's
have come around.
It's true. It's true.
We have certainly become friends of bizarre, phenolic. You know, the Band-Aid flavor and aromas of certain scotches, you know, peat. We're getting used to challenge. But I do think that Americans have a problem with bitter. Although, you know, we're eating radicchio now.
Here we are.
And we're we're eating greens that are more and
bitter
more
greens,
bitter.
Yeah.
But it is still not really in our character. Do you find – because I walked in your bar and I remember looking up at the wall and I was like, wow. There's some Amaro.
People are, what's that?
But
then I break
bitter.
It down for them and I tell them that not everyone is super bitter. There's really approachable Amaros like Maletti, Amaro Nainino, Montenegro. And adding into a cocktail can bring you the best things, the best notes, like rose hips, lavender, saffron, like things that like you can get. It's just such a fun way to play around and experiment. It's so much fun.
This drink is shockingly like iced tea.
I know, isn't it?
It's
crazy.
Got so much.
Yeah.
I don't know if it's the tannins.
Yeah.
I don't know what it is. So personally for me, I went from bitter.
Yeah.
To rediscovering liqueurs that I'd thrown off. You know, I've become a huge Fernet Branca fan.
Me too.
I love medicinal, bitter and medicinal, really.
It's good
big.
For you.
And then I discovered there was a whole other world of vermouth.
Yeah, oh my gosh.
That it was even bigger than the world of Amaro. And so it's like now, I mean, I just drink vermouth. You know, like,
oh my gosh, totally.
Home, I will chill maybe a little ice and
do you like Punta Mess?
You'd have to show me the bottle. I can't remember names sometimes.
Yeah.
Imbue makes
yes.
Is one that I drink a fair amount of.
Yeah.
Fairly sweet, but,
mm-hmm.
but I like their stuff.
Yeah,
but
after dinner, that's like one of the best things.
If I don't know what I want, I buy on labels. I will buy a label. I will buy
I am
a bottle
a
with a pretty
label. Packaging.
It works for me.
If it's pretty and nice and fancy,
industry?
Looks like old school, done.
But I'll go to places where I can sample a few things, and I buy on aroma. Sometimes
absolutely.
Aroma is more important to me than it's such a big part of flavor.
It is
to
such
me.
A big part, the aromatic.
But you work in a world where you're stomping on aromatics most of the time with this stuff called ice.
Yeah.
So do you support the view that if you really want to experience a spirit, you're going to drink it neat in a glass?
For sure.
Yeah?
Totally. But I'm also a realist, and sometimes you need to have a little water to drink a hot,
so is ice,
hot, you know, it can help.
Is ice more about the water?
Yeah. It's more and opening up the spirit as well. But I feel like to try, if you are like really into whiskey and you want to try Pappy's 23 year, don't put ice in it. You got to try it the way it's like coming out exactly from the barrel, you know? But I understand why people
you know,
put ice
Julian
in it.
Julian Van Winkle puts lemon peel in his whiskey.
There you go.
Even his 23.
Even his 23.
I personally, look, it's fine.
Yeah.
I have it. I've had it. I actually like the 12 better, to be honest.
The 12 is really good.
I really like the 12 better.
I only get the 12 and 10 year at Soto, which is.
But you know, there's a lot of brown liquor to fuss over
yes,
out there in the
there
world.
There really is.
Before
there's
you start,
so much.
Before you start getting in fist fights and paying $500 for
yeah.
a bottle of Pappy Van Winkle.
Yes.
Now, I will drink that stuff all day long.
Yes.
And I'm very grateful for the bottles.
No, but there's
that I
so
have.
Many good.
But there's a lot of good sipping whiskey
out there.
I will drink anything in a bottle that says Willett on it.
Oh my gosh. I have their pot.
Colonel Taylor. I collect their various bottlings.
Whistlepig, when I poured first.
Whistlepig, I think, has done, you know, because I'm such a rye fan.
Yeah.
I prefer rye to bourbon, to be really honest to you. But rye seems to, I thought it was going to boom. I thought that, that rye was absolutely going to take off because,
yeah,
you know, Whistlepig,
less sweet.
Came out, Lock, Stock and Barrel, which mm-hmm. does just amazing bottlings. And then, you know, Hudson, you know, the baby
Hudson.
Bourbon in their
Manhattan
rye. The Manhattan rye is spectacular.
So good.
You know, people are like, oh, that stuff's made in New York. And I'm like, yeah, it is. And it's
awesome.
Wonderful. why hasn't rye quite caught on?
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know. Maybe because of the, you know, the whole of America, like we are ruled by sweet. Maybe because of bourbon being slightly, you know, made with more, with corn, it's going to be sweeter. So maybe.
I don't know. I like the spice.
Me too. I love the spice, the hot spice note. Absolutely.
And I've actually gotten to wear full on corn whiskey. I have a hard time with it. I mean, if it's 100% corn mash, the mash bill,
I'm
and there's some out there that are really good, but they're just not my cup of tea.
No, totally.
And
I can't
figure out how
to
drink them.
My palate's more towards the rye.
Yeah.
That spice.
Do you have your bar at home? Let's talk about, I'm always curious about what people have at home because you work around this stuff all day.
Mm-hmm.
Do you ever go home and it's like, you just don't want anything or do you always kind of like want a cocktail?
I'm always around cocktails. So I'm more making cocktails for people than me actually
or
drinking
cocktails. What do you drink?
But if I'm
drinking, just want to drink for you.
Neat tequila, some Amaro that I have in the freezer.
Okay, let's talk about tequila.
I love mixing together Fernet and Campari, having a Ferrari.
A Ferrari?
It's called a Ferrari.
Shut up.
Yeah. I'll make you one Friday.
Fernet and iced coffee.
Oh, I've never done that.
Well, when I was in Italy, I hung out at a little cafe where they... They dosed Doppios with a little Fernet.
Wow.
And so I really got addicted to the, or just very acclimated to the flavor of coffee and Fernet Branca together.
Okay.
But no, Fernet Branca and iced coffee with just a little bit of sugar, like one sugar cube.
Yeah, I'm sure it's great.
Really good. And then when I'm really white trashing.
Yeah.
Fernet Branca and Tab.
You know, I've never had a Tab before.
Well, Tab is a very special drink. It's hard to find. You know, it was the original diet drink made by Coca-Cola.
That's what it is, the original.
But it's flavored with saccharin. It's sweetened with saccharin.
Okay.
So there's a bitter after note.
I need to try Tab.
And I find that Tab rolls in to...
Oh my gosh, do you have a Tab? I've never had a Tab before in my life. This is so exciting. Oh my God, really?
I'm
so excited.
You know, people think, well, he lives in Atlanta, he lives in a Coke.
Oh my gosh, I get to try Tab.
I want you to experience this pure.
I'll
rinse this glass.
Oh my
but what I want you to note is I want you to note the aftertaste. Now, you don't have to like it, which is absolutely fine.
No,
but I think you might
like
agree
it.
That when you have a little bit of that, that that works with Fernet Branca.
The aroma.
I don't know that there's any aroma. I'm not going
to
lie to you.
I'm just kidding. I'm trying to be
professional. Go ahead. That's a very different diet soda.
Oh, no, I like that.
That's
like perfect.
It's bitter on the back end.
I love Tab. Bring Tab back.
So, Tab
full
to
force.
Me is basically Diet Coke with bitters.
Yeah. Actually,
which I actually add to sodas.
I do that.
Because I travel
that.
With
I do that.
Bottles of bitters.
Yeah, I've done... It's so good in Diet Coke, Angostura bitters.
I put it in...
Have you ever done it with Angostura bitters?
I mean, Sarah knows it my place, I've probably... My bar is probably like 15 different kinds of bitters. Bitters became... When did bitters hit? I mean, 10 years ago, we had Angostura and Peychaud.
Yeah, and now
and
it's like
now,
everything.
Everybody
everything.
Is making. There's a company in Atlanta called 1821, which is cranking out... All kinds of, like, they make a Baltimore that's like, Old Bay and, you know, chamomiles and Earl Greys and blah, blah, blah. And people are buying
them. It's cool.
All over the place. What made that happen?
I think people just want to have variations of, let's say, old fashions at home and they can do like a different bitters in each one and make something different. They can be their own mixologist or any bar person that buys a different bitters. And with me, it's bitters are so fun. Just add that little extra element.
Do you think it's a hipster thing? Is it a hipster thing?
Totally hipster.
Is it a totally hipster thing?
Yeah.
So
for
mine are
for sure.
orange bitters and burnt orange bitters. And then there's a company called Dash Fire that makes a brandy bitters that I like an awful lot.
Oh.
So I will go through periods of time where I don't drink. And I will, what I'll have is bitters
and
club soda.
Yeah.
And I'll mix
for
up
sure.
my bitters and try different things.
Yeah.
And I travel with them because on an airplane, it's great to be able to spice up something with bitters.
I've had a few of the little baby Angostura bottles are perfect.
Well, and a lot of companies are only making like 1.5 ounce
They're smart
droppers,
to do that.
You know, and so you just took those and I was like, that's medicine. I'm taking,
yeah,
I'm going to have that
it's
on
your
the
medicine. Come on. Of course.
Do you think that it bodes well, for culinarians and people in our industry, mm-hmm. that these challenging flavors are suddenly being embraced? First, things
yeah.
like Amaro, these bitter liqueurs, and now actual just plain old bitters or tinctures, which are sometimes very strong.
Yeah, like, I mean, blending towards it, meaning like that it, all these people are now making these culinary bitters, or...
Well, I mean, just what does it say about, is it bode well for the people are eating, ingesting these flavors and enjoying them? And will that change their expectation for what they want from food, what they're willing to accept
from cooks?
Yeah, because
they're heightened, I'm sure.
Because now they're getting
used to these
complexities.
They're heightened flavors and all, yeah.
So do you ever feel that part of your job is to soften up the target, as it were, for more challenging flavors? I mean, let's face it, a bar in a restaurant like Soto, you
yeah.
are there essentially to serve the food. I mean, you're...
Oh, absolutely. Yeah.
So if people are willing to drink these complex things and enjoy these complex flavors, what does that mean they will accept on the food plate? And does it change
That's true.
What they will accept on the food plate?
I feel like I try to make my menu so that if something were not to go for it, I base it like it's a dessert cocktail or it's an aperitif. So like something with a bitter Campari, I would have people suggest like that they have it before the meal. So it doesn't like go into the flavors of the food that they're, you know, their salad or the things that they're having at the beginning. But I feel a lot of the times that there's definitely ways where you can heighten the flavors from the cocktail and the food together. Absolutely. So I think that's a thing where people are starting to not only pair wine, but pair cocktails with food. And I think that's really cool. And it's making them, you know, taste the fennel that's in their salad, but also the fennel that's in their cocktail and how cool that can be.
So the cocktail supports the salad.
Yeah, I think it supports it. Yeah, for sure. Like a yummy, citrusy, refreshing cocktail with your salad that has notes that are similar to what's in your food. That's just going to make you taste more,
right?
I feel bring out flavors that
sure,
you know, heighten them.
I read around the beginning of the year 2016, I was reading someone's prediction that wine cocktails were going to become the rage this year.
Yeah,
opinions,
wine with cocktails,
no, wine cocktails built out of wine.
Cocktails built out of wine. I mean, I've had a few cocktails that I've made with wine, and I actually have a new idea that when I was in Italy, people make, it was so funny, one of these winemakers that I went to, they were telling me that their mom used to make them sparkling Moscato, honey, and cream, and as kids, they would drink that. And in my mind, I'm like, cocktail.
My kids.
But also, like, how amazing of a cocktail would that be if I put some gin in there? Or if I put a nice whiskey.
Have you tried it yet?
I haven't. I'm actually asking my purveyor now to get me a good sparkling Moscato. But you know what I mean? Like, that is so, I believe it. I've done a ginger red wine cocktail before. That's
what?
Good.
Ginger red wine cocktail?
Yeah, a kitty cocktail. That's just like kind of, I'm not sure if it's necessarily a classic cocktail, but I think it might be a classic type of cocktail where it's like ginger beer and red wine.
Interesting.
Yeah. So yeah, that's happening.
I'm for it. Do you set aside time to play?
Yeah.
With, I mean, and when cocktails. You do you like, keep notes of all the things that you want to try, and then you gather everything around you and say, okay, for the next 6 hours, I play with these things. And how do you do that? How do you structure your play?
Of making a cocktail?
Yeah.
I feel like...
when you decide to play with these tools.
Yeah, I have to get inspired by something. So whether it's like, honestly, a movie, a liqueur, an ingredient...
a movie?
Anything, honestly.
Name a movie that has inspired you to make a cocktail.
From Dusk Till Dawn. I had that movie.
Okay. First off, From Dusk Till Dawn is technically a horrible movie.
Yeah.
Okay.
No.
We're talking about a Quentin Tarantino film with a very young and not yet famous George Clooney playing Quentin Tarantino's brother. What did you possibly yield from?
For me, honestly, it was just the name of the
movie.
Like the name and the movie's crazy. So
the movie is
so I knew that like crazy. If somebody sees the title, they're gonna be jumped by it and they're gonna look at it. So that's another thing on my cocktail menu. And so I wanted
what's in a From Dusk Till Dawn?
A Dusk Till Dawn is like a Rye Negroni and a fruit punch had a baby with the little muddled strawberries in it. It's really good. It kind of looks like
this
a sunset.
Like a
no. So good. So
it's
good.
A headache coming.
There's no actually added sugar, so it's basically just the strawberries that give you a little bit of the sugar. It's very balanced.
Okay.
Carpano, Campari, rye, muddled.
So was that an instance of actually being inspired by the movie or just like
the name?
You just like
the name from that, like, you know, seeing, oh, it's on today. And then I was like, that would be a great cocktail. And then I'm like, I should have the garnish be a half orange wheel, so it kind of looks like a sun from Dusk Till Dawn. You know, things like that, randomly, or an ingredient.
Well,
I love plain.
Good.
Like, I tasted this iris liqueur called Iris. Actually, it's called Iris, and it's actually made from irises. And
this is back to you making perfume out of roses.
Exactly, exactly. As soon as I tasted it, I knew exactly where I was playing around with a cocktail that I wanted to do, like a frothy violet gin sour. And as soon as I tasted that liqueur, I knew that was the last ingredient to my cocktail. So it's like I can be inspired from anything, honestly.
What is the most unusual thing you've been inspired by?
Probably Britney Spears. You're gonna laugh.
Britney Spears?
Yeah, I'm a huge Britney Spears fan.
So you have a Britney Spears cocktail
On my menu right now. Dream Within a Dream.
What is
it? It's a riff on a gin martini. It's a sexy lady cocktail.
A sexy lady cocktail. All right, is that an entire division of cocktails?
Yeah.
Or what do you have to have in a cocktail?
I feel like
a sexy lady
cocktail would have something that has to do with floral notes.
Okay.
Gin, something that's aromatic, something that has a beautiful color, beautiful garnish, and a nice coupe glass.
Okay, so go ahead and tell me.
So,
about
Dream Within a Dream.
I know.
She inspires me.
No, I'm not criticizing.
it's all good. Basically, one of my favorite absolute classic cocktails is called a Poet's Dream, and it's
what's in a Poet's Dream.
Poet's Dream is gin, orange bitters, Benedictine, very little bit Benedictine, and dry vermouth. And I loved the measurement on that cocktail, and I just thought that, you know, there could be a nice variant to this measurement, but with some different variables, like grapefruit and Mileti Amaro, which one of my favorite Amaros, that to me, if Amaros were boys and girls, Mileti would be this beautiful woman. It's like rosy, lavender, saffron. And
but it's still bitter.
It's still bitter, but it's not crazy bitter. It's not hey, aren't we all bitter?
So it's not in the crazy bitter girl club, which is a completely different concept.
Hey, but that's a little bit of in all of us, you know? So we can be beautiful and bitter, can't we?
So does Britney Spears know that you've concocted a
well,
cocktail
I thing? Have, you know, put it on social media a bit, and I have some other Britney fans that follow me from that. So I'm hoping more and more.
She's surfacing right now.
Oh, she's
surfacing.
Yeah, who knows?
She's coming up.
Yeah, she is surfacing. It's the rise of the phoenix once again. Yes.
We all get our inspirations.
We all do. I do. And people laugh at me so much. And it's funny. It's like, hey, we all get inspiration from anywhere.
We do.
Yeah.
And you never know where it's going to be next.
And you know, I know I'm not supposed to, but Work, BITCH, that's one of her songs. How is that not for any female person that's working in the bartender community? What kind of a
you gotta have
anthem is that?
Is it? Is that like the official song?
Well, for me,
your,
in my mind.
For you.
Yeah, in my mind. Yeah.
Well, thanks for being with us.
Oh my God, so much fun.
Thank you.
So much fun.
It is now time on the Alton Brown Cast to do the segment that we call the cocktail queries. Cocktails because we're drinking cocktails, queries because you're asking questions. My glass is pretty much, you know, you could give me a little bit of that if
I
you
can
wanted
share.
To. Thank you.
Oh, nice.
Okay. Boulevardiers again. So this segment is all about taking a few minutes for my Dodo, that is Director of Digital Ops, Sarah Dehir, to ask me a few questions from the interwebs. She watches over and shepherds my flocks on the on social media. And does anybody want to know anything?
Dodo is now the shepherd. Yeah.
Dodo is now a shepherd. You are actually a shepherd of my flocks.
Kay Fogle from Facebook. Good question. Do you like to plan recipes around the food you have, or do you buy food after picking out recipes?
I almost always let the ingredient come first. I will be going through a market or a store and I will say, oh, what a lovely little head of cabbage you are. Would you like to come home with me and get it cut up and put in a pan with some butter and some peas?
Do you say it out loud like that and in public?
Sometimes I do. Sometimes I do whisper to the food. Okay. And I'll be like, oh, chicken, little bitty chicken, little headless chicken. You want it?
Oh, if you could only see the faces he's making.
So it's usually, but I mean, every now and then I'll be like, you know what? I'm in a mood for chili. I'm going to make a pot of chili. And then I go to the market and get all the stuff for chili.
I am going to ask a question that is kind of a reverse of one of the most popular questions you get.
You're literally going to say it backwards?
Yeah. Why and pick you would who a lot. Okay, no, I'm not going to do it. Here's the question, but don't answer it, okay? Because I'm not going to change it up.
Okay, fine.
If you could make dinner for any celebrity dead or alive, who would you pick and why? And here's why I asked that question. You hate this question, and I don't want you to answer it, but I want you to tell fans why you actually hate answering that question, and maybe they'll stop asking it. You like what I did there?
Because dead people don't eat.
That is not the reason.
They lay there and rot, and they don't. And you can try to even put food in their mouths and move it up and down, and nothing happens. It just falls back out.
Dead or alive.
Oh. Why? So, oh, hell. So why do I not like this question?
You say it's very morbid.
The dead people thing?
No, the
one that I say is morbid is the – I never like answering the one about your last meal request.
You hate this one too.
I do? It's because I don't have any famous friends.
You don't have to have famous friends. It's saying if you could, anybody. We're going to scratch this.
No, because I don't want to talk about it. I didn't realize that I had animosity issues with this question.
You do have
animosity. I have voiced concerns
with this
before.
I will agree that the morbid thing does relate to the fact of what would your last meal be, so don't ever ask that. However,
you know that the state of Texas used to have a website where you could look up condemned prisoners' last meal requests.
You would
and it
know
was
this.
Really interesting.
You would know this.
Any people living or dead, and I'm having a cocktail party. I'm having a dinner party.
It could be anything, honestly. You have always said, not a fan of this question.
I'm not, but I'm going to go. I'm going to go. But they have to be celebrities. They have to be famous. But they could be dead.
I think it could be anybody. Most people do say celebrity.
Federico Fellini, because Fellini was my favorite Italian filmmaker and once said, life is magic and pasta.
I like this person.
You do. I know you do.
I like this person.
And he made 8.5 and La Dolce Vita. So I'm going to go with him. I'm going to pick my guys first. My next guy is going to be Ernest Hemingway. Because no one was better at describing food than Hemingway was. And I'm going with Winston Churchill because nobody was better at insulting other dinner guests. One more guy, Orson Welles, another filmmaker, another big time eater, obviously. I don't know what his final weight was, but you know, he famously said that his doctor said that he had a you've got to stop having lunches for four unless you invite three other people.
So I should stop.
So that's you are the Orson Welles of my current age. So I've got Orson Welles. I've got Winston Churchill. I've got Ernest Hemingway and Federico Fellini. Now for the women, Queen Elizabeth I, because she was a fantastic party girl.
You know this for...
Well, I've read.
Okay.
Elizabeth I, yeah. I'm going to go with... Oh boy, famous famous woman. I'm gonna say Ingrid Bergman, because Ingrid Bergman in Casablanca, that's pretty great. I need some literary. Jane Austen. Okay. Because that would be so awesome. We could all sit around and just talk around things and not ever say what we actually mean. So that'd be cool.
But what about Winston Churchill? What if he was there and Jane Austen was
there? Oh my God, that would be so awesome. That would be really, really cool.
I'd like to see how Jane would approach that.
Interestingly. And then,
he's thinking.
Hey, what's the,
no.
I can't believe that I can't come up with
so
this.
Big.
No. Oh, she was on Mad Men.
Peggy?
No.
Joan.
Yes. Joan from Mad Men, because she would keep everybody so entertained. What was the actor? What's the character? The actress's name that played Joan on Mad Men.
But would you want the actress awesome or Joan?
No, I'd actually want Joan. I'd want the character, because she would be so good at handling Winston Churchill and Ernest Hemingway.
I think that's smart.
That would be good. And then I need somebody that's just like...
you're talking about Christina Hendricks.
Yes, but I want her playing Joan when she comes to the party.
But Joan beginning of Mad Men or Joan at the end of Mad Men?
Joan at the... Ooh,
I just got you.
Pre...
I love when I stump
before in. The sale, before
okay.
Sterling Cooper was sold. I'm going to go with that.
Well, let's.
So there's my dinner party.
I think it's great. Can you say it all over again? So for once and for all,
okay.
No one has to ask this question ever again.
I'm inviting Orson Welles, Federico Fellini. I'm inviting Ingrid Bergman. I'm inviting Ernest Hemingway. I'm inviting Orson. Did I already say Orson Welles?
No, you got.
And where's Churchill? I said Churchill. And Joan from Mad Men. And
Jane Austen.
I'm short. And Jane Austen. So I've got Jane Austen, Elizabeth I, Joan from Mad Men, and Ingrid Bergman. Yep. And then I've got my guys. I've got two filmmakers, a writer and a statesman. I'm
You're set.
I'm okay. I'm a little shallow on the women's side, because there are certainly
some
more interesting, like
fantastic women.
Golda Meir would be pretty fabulous to have, because she was a really interesting woman. But I'm sticking with that.
I have to say, for someone who hated that question, you had a lot of fun answering it.
And it took up a good 8 minutes.
Fantastic
of content. So there you go.
Okay.
Okay.
Well, I'm glad you enjoyed that.
There we go.
You got me interested talking about Mad Men, because rest in peace, that show was just wonderful. Talk to me about what you're watching right now.
Well, you know, I binge.
Yeah.
I didn't start watching Mad Men till Mad Men ended. And that's because I think I'd spent too much time around the advertising industry, and I just couldn't.
I also forced you into
it. I couldn't get into it. But then when I did, you know.
You went all the way really fast. Current day TV shows you are binging.
I am currently binging. Better Call Saul is maybe better than Mad Men.
Two completely different genres. You can't say that.
Well,
you can laugh at Better Call Saul when at the end of Mad Men, you're just like,
you know who I want to hire, who I want to have work for me? I want Mike.
Who doesn't?
I want Mike to come work for me. And then you also know that for some reason, and I can't explain it, I am addicted to Ray Donovan.
Why can you not explain that?
I don't know, because it's not really my kind of show. I got into Ray Donovan when I was, it was real dark, when I was working. We were shooting Cutthroat Kitchen in the Hollywood studios there, Raleigh's Hollywood studios near Paramount, off of Melrose. And they were like, it was very LA. And I started watching Ray Donovan, and now I'm like, I can get a baseball bat to go in the trunk of my car just so I can kind of feel like Ray Donovan.
You want
to
be Ray.
I want to be Ray. And then that means you're Lena.
I can handle that. I'll take that.
Other things.
You're missing a big one.
Mr. Robot.
Yes.
I adore Mr. Robot. Mr. Robot, I think, is probably the smartest, most screwed up show on television. The fact that USA would make that unbelievable. Great, great, great show. And I love the way it's shot. As a one-time cinematographer in life, I really appreciate the way that Mr. Robot is shot and edited. and it's beautifully acted. And it's one of those shows where it's over and you're like, what? What just happened?
That's not
you remember
just
that one they did where he was getting the crap beat out of him so bad that he saw the whole first part of the show as a 1980s.
That was amazing.
Oh, my God. They even got the video style down right.
Did.
The laugh track.
The commercials.
Commercials. It was a stunning piece of placement for Budweiser that they pulled off that night because it was all fake spots until they
the
slipped
commercial.
In like a 1984 Bud Light spot, which is pretty amazing.
Here's the thing. I love Mr. Robot. I have to watch every episode 3 times to feel like I've I have no idea what happens the first time.
What is up with that Danish chick?
No one knows.
Mrs. Tyrell, you know who I'm talking about.
Everyone knows.
Everybody knows. I mean, I couldn't believe some of the stuff that they were putting on TV. Oh, you want to talk television? I have one word. Sherlock.
Everyone is waiting for the return of Sherlock.
Oh,
every one of your fans
man.
Feels the same way. Let's not even go there because it's so frustrating.
You want to hear my Moriarty imitation?
Only if you say Moriarty, right?
All right, we're done here.
No, do it.
That's what they do! I got some spit on the microphone. That's all the time we have. Thanks for listening to the Alton Browncast. I promise next week it won't get quite so weird. But hey, when you mix, you know, internet questions with cocktails, that's what happens. Have a really great week and take a listen next time.